Lunch with Pippa Hudson.
And now,
Consumer Talk featuring Wendy Nola.
So glad to have Wendy safely back with us in Cape Town and in studio. It's lovely for me to see another face on the other side of the desk, Wendy, for the first time in a while. Welcome back.
Thanks so much, Pippa. Good to be here.
We are going to be chatting about the concept of right of admission reserved today. And if you've had experience with being denied access to a public space, or if you've been the person who was in the position to say, sorry, you can't come in, and you want to share with us the circumstances, we welcome your stories. You can call in on 021-446-0567. Or pop through a voice note to 072-567-1567. Now, the spark for this topic, of course, Wendy, came from that now famous, or rather infamous, incident at the Midrand Mall 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so that it was about 2 weeks ago. The video of the manager of that Midrand Mall, Boulders, ordering Ndebele activist Thando Mhlanga out of the Click store in the mall on the grounds that his so-called underwear was indecent. So that clip was widely shared on social media, and it turned the spotlight on that line, which all of us, as you say, have seen so often at the entrance to shops, restaurants, hotels, and more, but seldom considered. Right of admission reserved. R-O-A-R, or ROAR, as I've kept writing in the past week over and over. So Redefined Properties, which owns the Boulders Mall, has since said that the incident was regrettable and apologized to Mhlanga and the Ndebele Nation, and committed to strengthening diversity training efforts for all its center managers. So I think it's safe to say that the consensus is that the manager's reliance on right of admission reserved was unfounded in that case. But it got me thinking, in what kind of scenario would it be appropriate, and do managers and security guards have adequate training around what is permissible and what isn't in terms of enforcing that ROAR? So, for example, knowing the difference between a service dog and an ordinary canine companion, not that they're ordinary, but you get my meaning, or guide dog, is key, as is being able to tell the difference between a pram and a special needs wheelchair with a disabled child in it. And I have several examples that I've been involved in or read about in recent years where that hasn't happened, and it's resulted in a lot of unnecessary angst and drama.
Okay, so we're going to mention a couple of examples just to illustrate the nature of the problems here when stores get it wrong, Wendy. And the year 2019 seems to have been a particularly bad one, because so many of these case studies are from there, starting in April of that year.
Right, so a couple were refused entry to a Zara store at the V&A waterfront for the third time, apparently, because of their service dog. This is a dog trained to assist the then 70-year-old husband with Alzheimer's. So Pam Goodall, who was 66 at the time, said it was a big problem in Cape Town and she was growing tired of it. She told, I think it was the Cape Times, one of the local newspapers, our dog Freedom has her bright red jacket on. She's a registered service dog and her jacket states that. The manager wouldn't hear of it and said, but your husband is not blind. It is company policy not to allow dogs.
Okay, now you can understand somebody who works in an expensive fashion store not wanting dog slobber on the clothes.
Of
That's
course.
One thing, Wendy, but a dog in a service jacket that states I am a service dog is a very, very different scenario from someone wanting to bring their pet into
the
store with them.
Lack of training there, definitely, because obviously knew about guide dogs, and knew blind person with dog is okay, but the training hadn't been extensive enough, obviously.
To let them know that there are other kinds of service
animals. And
apparently
this couple said they encountered that at other stores in Cape Town as well. So there's that. Definitely more training required. Also back in 2019, Lee Haskin was prevented from entering the Savemore Superette in Mitchell's Plain because her then four-year-old son was in a special needs wheelchair. To the owner, it was an ordinary pram, a buggy sort of thing, and prams were not allowed in his store. Incensed, Lee took the case to the Equality Court, which last year, just before lockdown, found in her favour. She said the ruling was that discrimination had taken place against my son in that store on that day, and she felt vindicated. She really was determined to see that one through.
Okay, another example from February 2019.
Yes, this is one that I reported on myself. Pinky Nkomo was reprimanded by a security guard at a shop right in Paro for arriving barefoot in her shorts and T-shirt on a Sunday morning. Well, not arriving exactly. He only caught up with her when she was already in the store in the fruit and veg section. And He started berating her. She and her partner had been cleaning and painting their new flat when they popped into ShopRite to buy some cleaning stuff. And so, yeah, there she was berated for her clothing. It would appear, according to her boyfriend, who I spoke to as well, that she had one of those long T-shirts on over shortish denim shorts that certainly my daughter, when she was a student, spent most of her days in summer. I obviously took it up with ShopRite, who said the company was disappointed by the manner in which the security guard had handled the situation. We apologize for any ill treatment that the customer experienced. The matter is being addressed with the security provider to ensure that the guard gets the necessary upskilling to avoid future misunderstandings in this regard. So I had to ask, does ShopRite or Checkers have a dress code for its customers? No, it does not. We are sensitive about clothing and behavior that could offend other customers and treat cases on an ad hoc basis. But in this instance, the customer should not have been confronted by the security personnel at all. And certainly as far as right of admission goes, I think it's safe to say, had he seen her coming in, the altercation probably would have happened at the entrance, saying you're not dressed well enough appropriately to come into the store.
I mean, the sort of a dress code for a grocery store is one that's making me smile a little bit, because earlier when I mentioned that we were talking about this, my colleague Amy McIver, Wendy, told us that she was once refused permission, or thrown out of rather a restaurant because she was barefoot. It was a beach restaurant, is what I thought, because I could understand.
Yes, context is everything.
That context, it would have been completely appropriate.
So, seeing a bikini top, maybe with
a
mesh top over or something like that. As you say, context is everything. Something that comes up a lot in my inbox and on Twitter is people increasingly, this trend of wearing pajamas out. You see it at filling stations. Often with children, but we've always seen that. But now the adults with their little gowns and slippers and everything on as well. And I saw a tweet somewhere the other day saying it's a thing at Debonairs. It's almost the dress code. You've got to get your anyway. So in 2016, an image was widely shared of a spa notice with a no pajamas sign through it, saying a band sort of sign saying, to avoid causing embarrassment to others, we ask that our customers are appropriately dressed when visiting the store. It went viral on social media, but at the time the spa group insisted it had no policy limiting what its customers could wear, and the group marketing executive Mark Prentice told me that he doubts the authenticity of the sign. He wasn't able to find out where that went up or if it went up.
Okay.
Yeah, and Spa said, we will never dictate what you can and cannot wear within the bounds of decency, obviously.
Okay, and we're going to be talking to a lawyer in a moment or two, because there's a lot of room for interpretation.
Absolutely.
In what one person considers decent and another doesn't.
And
which
there's
is,
a whole lot of cultural context as well, as
exactly
where the story began.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not only always about what somebody is wearing being the reason that they are refused entry, Wendy, and you've got quite a sad example to share with us that illustrates this.
Yeah, so it was almost 30 years ago now. The child in question is turning 29. So, yeah. A friend of mine, she accidentally shoplifted a low-value item from a Durban Woolworths store in her baby's pram. And we've spoken about the dangers of prams. And this was days after her husband was killed in a car crash. She was detained and released eventually, but banned from the store for a year. So that was a form of long-term RAW, right of admission,
right of admission
reserved
for 1 year.
And
it
traumatized her. So I asked Woolworths now in the last week or two if it still has that policy, and what behavior would a customer have to exhibit in order to get
barred from a store
or told you cannot come in now on this particular occasion. And the response went like this: in the event that an individual behaves in a manner that could put Woolworths, its people or customers at risk, or was inappropriate or offensive, for example the use of inappropriate language towards staff or customers, violent conduct, etc., we will issue an order reserving the right of admission to this individual. We will also prevent repeat shoplifters and known shoplifting syndicate members from entering our stores. However, each incident is treated on its own merits, and enforcing the right of admission reserved is always the option of last resort on our part after all attempts to resolve amicably have been unsuccessful. And certainly I would condone store management calling security on a customer who's verbally, racially abusing, which does happen, sadly, the staff. I would, you know, absolutely, they have to protect their staff as well.
Absolutely.
So obviously, there are sadly times when customers behave badly and shouldn't, it shouldn't be tolerated, and that, you know, they should be roared at.
Yeah. Okay. Now, so that's a little bit of what the stores say and some examples of cases where it's been implemented rightly and wrongly in some cases. The question now is, what does the law say, Wendy?
Right. So that's where I've asked someone who's known to the show, Cape Town-based consumer attorney Trudy Brookman, who's kindly agreed to clarify the issues, even though she's currently on leave and far, far away.
Trudy, we so appreciate you making time to speak to us today, especially seeing as you are on a break. Thank you very much. It's always lovely to have you on the show.
Thanks, Pippa and Wendy. It is so delightful to be on the show, and it's such a fun topic. It's really exercised my mind and my imagination. No pain on my side at all.
I'm so glad to hear it. Trudy, I mean, let's start with the obvious question. What laws are actually at play when it comes to the implementation of right of admission reserved?
Well, I'm going to give some – let's look at the specific example of Mr. Mahlangu, the gentleman with the Ndebele traditional attire. There, the Constitution really plays a huge role. And what's interesting and why I say that my mind's been exercised, is that we have the confluence of at least four legal principles at the same time. So
okay.
We have various of the constitutional principles and rights enshrined in our Bill of Rights that come into play. And of course, we need to always understand that with a constitution, a constitutional right isn't absolute. It can always be limited to the extent that that limitation is reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society based on human dignity, equality, and freedom. Mm-hmm. I'm quoting verbatim from the Act, as you can tell. So the main constitutional right, I think that applies in terms of one's traditional dress. And I'm so jealous that I'm an Afrikaner without any traditional dress. I must say, watching that video of Mr. Mahlangu in that magnificent attire, you have a constitutional right to equality. In other words, do not be discriminated against based on your culture, your ethnicity, your language, etc. Mm-hmm. And then there's a constitutional right that we don't usually talk about much, and that hasn't really featured a lot before the Constitutional Court, which is the right to enjoy your culture, which is a really interesting one. The right is qualified in the Constitution. It says that you have the right to enjoy your culture to the extent that that is consistent with the other constitutional rights. So you can enjoy your culture until it starts breaching one of the other rights, and then you need to do that, I think, more privately.
Okay.
Then we have the right to dignity. And of course, Mr. Mahlangu is entitled to dignity in the context of wearing his traditional attire. But at the same time, it can infringe on other shoppers, other consumers' dignity to suddenly encounter a person wearing something which may appear to you in your cultural context as being publicly indecent.
Sure.
And then we have the common law criminal offence of public indecency, and there I've had tons of fun reading up what our courts say about public indecency. Is nudity necessarily indecency?
Yeah.
Is it not? What about broadcasting? Playboy or something like that. What is the morality in terms of South African mores of public decency in a constitutional environment?
Mm-hmm.
The definition of public indecency is where you unlawfully, publicly, and intentionally engage in conduct which outrages the public sense of decency. And the reason that I'm mentioning this in the context of Mr. Mahlangu is that if you only saw the Twitter video, you wouldn't know this.
Yeah.
But there were other photographs published showing a picture of Mr. Mahlangu from the front.
Mm-hmm.
and he's wearing a loincloth with a pair of briefs. It's hard for me to make out exactly, and I didn't want to stare too much being a married woman. But he's wearing something which looks very much akin in a Western context to a pair of jockey briefs, mm-hmm. With our trousers over that. A bare chest with some beautiful beaded, I don't want to say jewelry, but as a neck piece, and then the lovely blanket worn as a sort of a coat over yeah. that. The loincloth is the reason that the gentleman, I'm assuming, that the gentleman who's the manager of the shopping center said to him that he was indecent. And I think that this is really the crux of the legal issue that confronts us in South Africa in 2021. What if a person's cultural attire is regarded as being indecent to other customers in the same shop? And what do commercial players such as a shopping center, a retailer, how do you exercise your rights in terms of the right of private property to reserve admission to your premises in a way which fits with the whole constitutional and also the criminal law legal environment, as well as our cultural and modern thinking around these things in 2021. So really an interesting confluence of various legal principles and a tricky thing to come to the bottom of.
Well said, Trudy. So the bottom line then, I suppose, is one of consistency and not applying different standards to different people, which raises an interesting question. So and gender comes into it as well, because Mr. Mahlangu was bare-chested, but had a woman been similarly attired with, you know, panties and no top. Well, actually, culturally, a Zulu maiden is perfectly acceptable to be in the context of their culture to be topless. So I suppose it's context would apply there. As you say, a tricky thing, because you've got very different cultural norms, and they don't all have the same idea about what is indecent, and yet we're occupying the same country in the same space, same public spaces. So I don't know how this would ever play out in court. But I suppose, again, it's down to the establishments and their owners, managers and security people to exercise discretion and a good dose of common sense when dealing with these matters.
Yes, absolutely, Wendy. Our courts have taken a fairly liberal view in terms of public nudity and indecency and those sorts of things, mm-hmm. and made a few interesting comments. The Constitutional Court said in State versus Jordan and others, which is a case which deals with prostitution, that a generous application should be given to freedom of expression and the freedom of choice of adults, and that morality is not the morality of the people of South Africa or any part of the people of South Africa, any particular group, but the morality which the Constitution of the Republic represents.
Okay.
So that's wonderful, but it's also quite hard to apply, especially if you're a shopping center trying to figure out, I've had a complaint about someone being indecent in public, but that person is saying, I'm just wearing my traditional attire. How do you choose between the two? Because your job as a retailer is to make everyone feel comfortable in your shop, right?
Well, so
okay, very, very interesting principles at play here. We're going to ask Trudy to stay with us on the line. We've just got to take a break for the Eyewitness News headlines, but I do want to keep her with us, Wendy, because after our having planned and set out this whole segment, another case that relates to right of admission reserve actually dropped into Wendy's lap within the last day or two, and I'd be interested to hear Trudy's take on that case as well. We continue. We're going to wrap up the conversation about right of admission reserved shortly. Still with us on the line is lawyer Trudy Brookman, who was explaining before the break the real complexities here, Wendy, involving whose rights Trump who's, because exactly. If one person's right to exercise their culture says an appropriate attire is one thing and somebody else who might be in the same space as them would view that as inappropriate attire, whose culture wins? I wouldn't want to be the judge making that call. And
exactly. As Trudy said, there are four different laws at play when you consider admission, what right of admission reserved. So, yeah, it would be wonderful if, and in most cases, these things don't go to court because common sense prevails eventually. Yeah. But a very interesting thing to grapple with.
So before we bring in the next example, Trudy, here's an interesting question from our listener, Alan, on our WhatsApp line. I wonder how this topic would extend to somebody who is a practicing nudist or naturist and subscribes to that belief and way of life. Would they be allowed then to practice their culture in the way they see fit? Trudy, any view on that?
I can give you a little bit out of the case law.
Yeah.
The basic principle of our law is that the courts have held time and again that nudity as such is not indecent or obscene. However, the context, as Wendy was saying earlier, context is everything. Mm-hmm. So what our law says is that if you exhibit yourself in public in an intentional manner, in other words, you exhibit yourself in no or indecent dress by way of a conscious display of a part of your body or parts of your body in a manner which is regarded as being indecent to expose in public for the purpose of being viewed by members of the public, then that hits the requirements in terms of public indecency and you would be committing a criminal offence. So
a flasher, I think the easiest example we can think of.
Sunbathing in your backyard is fine, but yes. Going to clicks in the nude, unfortunately,
not going to end well. Okay, thanks for that. Now, as I mentioned before the break, we actually had another more recent case coincidentally drop into Wendy's lap this week. Wendy, won't you just set the context for us?
Okay, so as I was preparing for the show, I got an email from Peter Boerte of Welcome. He was very upset at having been told that he was no longer welcome, excuse the pun, to visit the Mug and Bean in that town. In future, he said there's not much to choose from in the way of restaurants in that town, and this was his favorite, and he was there often and spent a huge amount of money there every month. He says he witnessed the franchise owner angrily admonishing a waiter, shouting at him and slamming his hand on the table. His own hand, not the waiter's hand. And when he confronted the owner about that, saying that he shouldn't have done that in front of customers because it was upsetting, the owner said he could do what he liked. And then he told Peter, at the end of the conversation, which Peter recorded, that he should finish his coffee, leave, and not come back. And then he uttered those words, right of admission reserved.
Okay, well, we actually have a recording of the incident. We're just going to play you a very short clip of a long engagement. Let's take a listen.
Phone everyone and tell them that I took on my staff in front of you, right?
You're not allowed to do that.
Listen, I'll do what I want in my shop.
You
please,
can't do that.
Please, and do me another favor.
You can't
finish
do
your
that.
Coffee and leave and don't come here again.
No, I will ever come here. Please. I will come here.
Well, right of admission reserved, my friend.
I will
I've
come
got
here.
The signs here.
I will come
I
here.
I will be removing
I've
you.
I've spent so much money in your
Listen,
shop.
Listen, and you've taken stock for that. You've eaten for it. You never gave me your money.
Very heated voices in the background there. Wendy and Peter obviously clearly upset not only at what he's being told about not coming back, but about the behavior he'd witnessed beforehand. Did he take it any further?
He did. He was actually invited by the owner to phone the CEO of the company and was given the number, and he did. And an apology swiftly followed, saying it shouldn't have happened. He's sorry for the way he reacted. Shouldn't have dealt with the staff in the front of house, and that, of course, Peter was welcome to return to that
to
restaurant.
The store. Okay, yeah,
so it was a short-lived roar.
But Trudy, what do you make of what you just heard?
So in this case, we don't really have constitutional principles that come into play, but we do have the principle in Section 48 of the Consumer Protection Act that says that contractual terms like the right of admission reserved must be exercised, well, number one, must be fair, reasonable, and just. And number two, they must be implemented in a fair, reasonable, and just way. So how do we interpret that? And, of course, it's quite hard. The law often speaks about fairness and justice, and those are very hard terms to give flesh to you in a practical manner. So the Consumer Protection Act gives us a bit of guidance in that sense. It says that behavior is unfair if it is excessively one-sided in favor of the supplier. And I think that we can say in this situation that the maybe excessive temper or expression of temper by the manager and owner of the Mug and Bean was excessively one-sided and in favor of only the supplier. And then also, if the term is so adverse, in other words, the right of admission term, is so adverse to the consumer that it's inequitable, in other words, unfair. And I think that's also the case, that there was an unfair response to Mr. Boeta in the context. I think we could all gather that from the clip that was played. So, we live in a wonderful era, actually, as consumers, where a supplier can make a rule and set up a contractual provision that says that they have the right to admit you or not admit you to their premises, and that's probably a good thing in principle. But then the Consumer Protection Act says, on top of that, it must be exercised in a way which is fair, reasonable, and just toward the consumer.
Right.
Trudy, thank you so much. We really appreciate you making time for us today, particularly given that you're on holiday. We'll let you get back to putting your feet up and doing something more fun than doing radio interviews, but always lovely to have you on the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you. And go well.
Thank you too. Keep well. Trudy Brookman on the line there from, I think, somewhere in the Drakensberg. And I hope she enjoys the rest of her time off. Trudy is, of course, a Cape Town-based consumer attorney that we often speak to on these matters. So, Wendy, just to wrap up the conversation on right of admission reserved, you also engaged with Famous Brands around this incident at the Mug and Bean.
I spoke to emailed their CEO, Darren Healy, and he didn't feel that this was a particularly worthy example of right of admission. He said there's two people that know each other. Well, I think they know each other in terms of a regular patron at one of very few restaurants in that town. I thought it was interesting because those words were uttered, actually, more than once by that owner. But he did agree, I'm happy to say, to engage with me about, you know, Famous Brands has very many QSR or quick service restaurants around this country, many brands, Wimpy, Devonair, Steers, and others. In terms of how raw right of admission reserved is applied or not applied in those restaurants, what their guidelines are. And he raised something that the others haven't, and that is that COVID-19 has added many health and safety precautions and forced service providers such as restaurants to put additional measures in place to protect their employees and, of course, customers from spreading or contracting the disease. So now what's included in right of admission reserved is if you're not willing to wear a mask properly,
can't come in.
Over mouth and nose, you can't come in. And I think everybody would agree with that, except for those who have the mask conspiracy. And, you know, we've seen those in the those American videos play out over and over, as is not wanting to sanitize, although it could be argued if you have a skin intolerance, you know, as long as you apply your own product.
Yeah.
So there's that, those obvious things. But here's something that Darren Healy told me that I wasn't aware of before. He says right of admission reserved originates from the Liquor Act and was used as a defense to stop serving alcohol to a drunk person.
Interesting.
The words don't seem to match because they're already inside.
Yeah.
Anyway, it has since been widely used across many businesses, including the restaurant industry. He said using the sign is perfectly legal. The Constitution provides for the protection of property owners who may exclude persons from their property. But to exclude someone, we do need to know the reason why and if it violates the Constitution. Otherwise, it would be seen as unfair discrimination, which is what Trudy said. And he goes on to talk about some of the laws. And he says we do use it to protect staff and customers against an intoxicated customer who wants to order alcohol, a customer who becomes violent, abusive, or threatens staff. We've spoken about that, and that's all well and good and justified. If they break the law, such as smoking in a restaurant, I have to say, you know, as most people know, I'm from KZN, and I, since moving here just over 2 years ago, I've seen absolutely the no smoking thing blatantly contravened all over the place.
Really?
And you certainly get the sense that management just turns a blind eye. So that would be an interesting one to test. If they're loitering without intending to buy, that's an interesting one. You sit down, open your laptop and don't order a coffee. I think that's fair enough. This is,
okay.
This is not for
and
that
if you want
purpose,
to sit and use our Wi-Fi, you must spend
exactly.
here.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those that have pets other than, and I was pleased to say he mentioned guard and service dogs.
Good.
So they know that both are included. And then, of course, if they don't comply with COVID protocols. And I think most reasonable people would, all reasonable people would agree with all of those situations requiring. I get complaints from people who said management didn't side with them when some man hit on them and unrelentingly. And, there were other places to sit in the restaurant and they wanted them to move away and management just ignored them. I'm not talking about any specific restaurant now. I can't remember which it was, but I mostly get people saying, I wish they would exercise it more effectively. Yes.
Yeah.
So very interesting topic.
Thank you so much, Wendy. And we'll continue with other open line consumer issues after this short break. If you want to raise a case, the number to dial is 021-446-0567.
Cape Talk.
Join the conversation.
And now,
Consumer Talk featuring Wendy Nola.
We want to move away from right of admission reserve to open line calls, but also to a warning, Wendy. We've spoken several times before about the need to check banking details when you're making an EFT. We've shared case studies of people who made mistakes and the horrible consequences, but you want to add an additional layer of warning today.
Yes, I do. Thanks to Joseph Slater. He alerted me to a problem that hadn't occurred to me. Many people, including Joseph, pay their utility accounts at their local retailer. And most of the big, if not all the big supermarkets, offer this as a service. So 9 months ago, he presented a cashier at Woolworths, the Coliseum store, with his City of Cape Town bill, as he usually had done. But the cashier in that instance had finger trouble twice, actually. She got one number wrong completely, and then she transposed two others, with the result that his 980 Rand payment went straight into somebody else's City of Cape Town account. So he then had to pay it into the proper account, but now he's 980
out of pocket.
Rand out of pocket, exactly. And he'd been battling for 9 months to get it back when he emailed me. So I approached Woolworths saying that given that it was their employee's mistake, I understand it's difficult to get that kind of recon done. Imagine with an entity as large as City of Cape Town. But that I felt that strongly that Woolworths should have reimbursed Joseph and then done battle with the City of Cape Town themselves behind the scenes to get that money back. So I got a response from Woolworths to say, thank you for bringing this to our attention. We sincerely apologize that it's taken this long for the issue to be corrected. The store has informed us that they had initially completed forms and submitted these to City of Cape Town to have the money transferred into the customer's account. The store was notified that it would take about 3 months for the money to reflect on the account. Well, it had been nine, three times as long.
3 months is long enough as it is.
Exactly. Why? The matter was escalated with the City of Cape Town again in January. Our teams are in contact with the customer to arrange for a refund. So at the end, address my point was that however long it takes, it was your mistake, your staff member's mistake. So
your responsibility to fix it.
Fix it immediately with them and then go on to try and recoup the money for yourselves. But so the warning that occurred to me out of this experience was if you are going to pay your bill this way, it's not a bad idea to just lean over and check that they've inputted the account number correctly to save yourself this kind of
the
drama.
The 9 months hassle that follows. Okay, thank you very much.
You're trusting someone else to put the number in correctly, which is a bit dangerous at times.
Because it's so easy to make a mistake. We've all done it. And I really like the fact that you're highlighting the need to just peer over the shoulder in this case. Okay. Wendy, an email that came in as we came to air today. Let me just find it from Peter. It comes back to issues we've dealt with before around refunds and right of return. And my initial reading of it is that in one case, Peter is incorrect in feeling aggrieved, and the other one, I'm not so sure. So let me share with you these scenarios. You see, the title of the email is Business is Making Our Blood Boil. He's very upset. The first one is where I think he has a leg to stand on. He said, we had an air conditioner installed in December last year. 2 weeks after installation, it developed a fault, which we asked the installer to resolve. After six visits to our home over 4 months, they were unable to resolve the problem, and they eventually removed the air conditioner for assessment at the supplier. Naturally, it did not produce the same fault while on test. Today, nearly a week after it was reinstalled, the same fault has presented itself. We are fed up. We've been asking for a replacement unit, which we think is within our rights, since the fault first occurred. After being assured how well the supplier store supported this product before we made our costly purchase, and this, the installer takes forever to reply to messages, ignores our calls and our requests for either a new unit or a refund. What can we do?
Okay, so it's within, the product is within its 6-month CPA warranty, which gives the consumer the right to choose the remedy between refund, replacement and repair, as we keep saying. Mm-hmm. It is the retailer's responsibility. So he shouldn't have to be dealing with the installer. That happens from month 7. But in the first 6 months, part of what the retailer takes is their cut. Includes them having to deal with the after sales issues around CPA for the first 6 months. So that's my first point, that the retailer should be taking complete responsibility of this, because it's now month 4 out of 6.
Yep.
The retailer may send the product off for assessment, as happened in this case, to rule out user abuse. So what becomes the issue now is, yes, he's most definitely entitled to a refund or a replacement, which is what he wants at this point, understandably. I mean, he's had all the summer months with this thing malfunctioning. But what is at issue now is whether it's a fault or not. So sometimes the simplest way to get around that is when the product is malfunctioning, and it might be difficult with aircon because you can't capture that in a video or a photograph. But if it's possible, if there's blinking lights coming on or something like that, to capture that so that there's proof of the issue, because they say they can't replicate it. I have this often with cars. Or if that's not possible due to the nature of the fault, to get in an independent third party to assess it. What often happens then, though, certainly with cars, is that the supplier, the retailer then says, oh, the problem was caused by that person.
Oy.
And that them interfering or opening or whatever the product has now voided
the warranty,
which is a very tricky one. So I'd like to deal with that off air if possible. The simplest way to resolve it is if he could possibly, even if it's making a funny noise or not making a noise or whatever, I'm hoping that there's a way to record the problem when it happens, so that we can lay to rest the issue of whether there's a problem or not.
Okay.
And when that's done, then he can most certainly go on to choosing a refund or a replacement.
Okay, thanks for that. The second part of his mail, that was the first part. The second part, my instinct is that Peter is not within his rights here, but maybe I'm wrong.
I know what you're going to say. Okay, another brand, possibly.
We bought nappies at a large store which has a no refunds policy. Okay, red flag. Within the 7-day period, we realized these nappies wouldn't work for us and returned them unopened to the store. The store says they will exchange them or give us store credit, but will not give us cash even within the 7-day period. I'm not sure what the 7-day period is meant to imply. Surely this is not legal practice, he asks. The regional manager called my wife while she was in store to say that they will accommodate us this one time, and that they clearly have signs all over the store saying that refunds are not given and that we must brush up on our consumer protection knowledge. Now, the no refund sign is one thing. It's returning the item is another, though, because there's nothing wrong with the nappies. They're just not right for them.
You've hit the nail on the head, Pippa. So I think, as I've been saying for 10 years, if people would only, consumers and suppliers, would only take the trouble to make a distinction between defective and non-defective returns, these daily cases that I get would certainly diminish, if not dry up. The no refunds sign has been illegal for the last 10 years, because if a product is defective, gives the consumer the right to a refund if they want it, or a replacement or a repair, whatever they choose, right? Most retailers just want to repair and repair and repair because it's the least hassle and expense for them. Right, so the nappies are not defective, and so that means that this couple has no right of return at all. The CPA does not cover the return of non-defective goods. So the store, in offering a credit or a refund or replacement, was actually doing him a favor, because they could have just said, there's nothing wrong with the nappies, we sold them in good faith, go away, kind of thing. so in offering one of those two things, as I say, they're going above and beyond the law to be harassed to the point where they say, okay, we'll give you your money back, I wouldn't. Well, it's their choice to do it. Very few retailers do it. Sometimes they just do it, you know, as a customer service. But offering a credit note or a replacement, an exchange. For maybe someone bought the wrong size or something. That is the norm, but it's also a customer service. It's certainly not a legal requirement.
Okay, so they're not obliged to do it, but you are right in flagging the no refund signs as being problematic.
If you have a no refund sign, a store needs to add of non-defective items.
Okay, thank you very much. Peter, if you would, see if you can capture some footage or a recording describing what is going wrong with that air conditioner and send that and remind the supplier that they are still within the 6 month, period in which you have that choice of refund, repair or replace. And if that still doesn't work, then please do, mail us back again and we can follow up, Wendy.
Absolutely.
Okay. We do have to wrap it there for this week. Wendy, it's been lovely having you back with us in studio.
Thanks,
again. Won't you just close by reminding our listeners where they get hold of you if they want to raise a case with you?
Sure. The email address is consumer@nola.co.za. Nola spelled KNOWLER.
And we'll chat again next week, Wednesday.